Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Being retired scientists ourselves, we like to encourage our youth to go into the sciences. We certainly need more scientists in this country these days. So this week, we'll talk about a science camp for chemistry students.
We'll speak with Hobie Wedler, a blind graduate student in chemistry, about a chemistry camp for blind teenagers that he founded and runs annually to share his love of science with youth. We'll review some of the highlights of each session, including some unexpected things attendees learn. Before we get started, we'd like to make an announcement. The Internal Revenue Service, those people who collect our taxes every spring, asked us to announce that they have lots of information about the products and services available for people with disabilities, including people with visual impairments. To get that information, you can listen to the entire episode of Eyes on Success that we did on the topic. That's number 1305. Or you can go to their website at www.irs.gov. And they have also created a YouTube video describing some of their products and services. And we will have a link to that and the IRS website and our show 1305 in the show notes for this show. Turning back to this week's topic, this week's tip comes from Hobie Wedler.
From what I know of you, Hobie, you certainly haven't let your blindness hold you back from anything you've wanted to do.
Well, I try not to. You know, it's always a nuisance, and we have to acknowledge that. But I like to think of blindness as a mere inefficiency, and the goal of life in general is, I think some might disagree with me, but as I think about it, it's to maximize efficiency of everything we do. And, you know, I think we just, as blind people, have to do things as efficiently as possible and try to get the most out of everything we got.
Well, that sounds like a great way to be leading your life, and it sounds like you're very happy and very successful doing things that way.
Hobie talked about how important it is to be efficient if there's something intrinsic that makes you inefficient, and that's probably a pretty good idea because otherwise you won't have enough time left in the day for what's important and or fun. Let's start by meeting Hobie and learning about some of his other ventures.
So Hobie, you've been on Eyes on Success before last year talking about being a chemistry PhD student. And this year we wanted to talk to you about something a little bit different, but maybe you can reintroduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Absolutely. Well, it's an honor to be back on and to be featured again on Eyes on Success. My name is Hobie Wedler, and I'm a fourth-year PhD student now. And I'm currently getting my PhD in computational organic chemistry with an emphasis on probing reaction mechanisms using transition state theory. I'm currently studying at the University of California, Davis, about 70 miles east of San Francisco here in Northern California. And one of my favorite parts about working at UC Davis as a blind person is that I also came here as an undergraduate and decided, you know, when thinking about whether I wanted to go to grad school at Davis or somewhere else, I decided on Davis because people know me here and I know them, and they really understand that a blind person can in fact do chemistry.
And you've been totally blind all your life, right?
I sure have, yeah.
Now, one of the things that you talked about when you were on the show previously was the work you were using with a 3D printer to help you understand these molecular structures that you're calculating.
Yeah, the 3D printer is running right now, and my little office here in the chem building is not surprisingly where I keep the printer. So directly behind me, about 4 feet behind me, is a structure that we're printing out for an investigation that we're going to do, and actually for a presentation I have to give on Friday. So printing out a structure of two rings fused together that I was able to build and actually optimize using no assistance at all, and actually ran quantum mechanics on the structure and optimized the positions of all the atoms, etc. So it was kind of exciting to do that. And I'm also working with a software that was conceived and constructed with our help by a group in the Netherlands that actually allows me to build any molecular structure, chemical, or even some physics models now using solely keyboard input. So my colleagues built structures that we study using a graphical user interface on the computer that they click through. But for me, using a GUI, GUI, graphical user interface, is a little bit of a challenge because I can't see the thing. So we had to figure out ways for me to enter structures in using the keyboard basically manually. And this new software that's only about 4 months old has allowed me to do that really with no problem at all.
And then what comes out of your 3D printer is a 3D model of the molecules that you're working with, I understand, the length of the bond structures printed in Braille on the bonds.
That's right.
So you also have another unusual interest that sort of hooks into chemistry. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I was excited last time as well to talk about my work with Francis Ford Coppola Winery as a wine tasting host and essentially wine educator now, and innovated a completely blind tasting with Francis himself in 2011. And it's a tasting basically in complete darkness where people sit for about 2 hours and smell and taste very cool wines from the Francis Ford Coppola Winery up in Sonoma County. And I've also extended that out to beer and in different foods as well. So we're really trying to develop a potential career in the wine and food sensory industry.
And you can also teach some sighted people how to use their other senses.
That's right. And that's one of the things that I very much enjoy doing and enjoy showing people. You know, vision is responsible for about 70 to 80%, I heard someone say once, of everything that sighted people do. You hear something fall on the floor behind you, you immediately look to see what it is. So it's what I call a first responder sense. And it's fun sometimes to think about, wow, we really do have a lot more power in those other senses that we don't often tap into.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is the chemistry camp that Hobie runs annually.
So we do want to talk about the camp, but maybe you can tell us first how you got involved in science and what stimulated your interest.
I've always loved sort of how things work and how things click together to make a picture, sort of how many parts can come together to make a whole, whether you're talking about something like the Earth that we live on coming together to make what it is, or looking at the plumbing structure of a house, or even how a grapevine grows. You know, you always have to think about all those parts that come together to produce something that is a working system. I think it's pretty incredible. And I guess in an abstract way, I knew that was science. So I always thought science was an interest of mine and talked about, wouldn't it be fun as a blind person to study science? But I didn't think about it as when I was young as, oh, is this possible as a blind person?
And what kind of input did you get from your parents about going into science?
I'll just say that my parents always encouraged me and my brother, who is sighted, to do whatever we want. And suffice it to say, they never let my blindness stop me from doing anything or lower their expectations of me, which is something that I'm forever grateful. I was never really considered their blind son. I was always considered Hobie Wedler, their son, who happened to be blind. And that was a great way to be raised. My parents were great because they had the practical advice and tone, which was do what makes sense and what you love. Don't just do what you love because you love it if it doesn't make any sense. Their prime example was don't be a truck driver and need an assistant all the time as a blind person. That makes sense. You know, I basically need someone to do my job for me. And that rang true, and I always thought, God, is science going to be available? Is it going to be accessible? Everyone talks about how visual it is. Now, does it really have to be that visual? And Peter, I know that's close to home for you, as you're a blind physicist.
And very similarly to you, I give my parents a lot of credit for how I succeeded in my career and where I wound up, because they always treated me with that sense of independence and telling me you could do whatever you want, but you have to be pragmatic about it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's not easy for a parent to let their kid go that way. There's a very much of a tendency to be overprotective and say, oh, my kid can't do this. But I really give them a ton of credit.
Yeah. You know, mine told me a couple of years ago, we have to tell you, it's been very hard to let you go and let you do all this stuff. And I really do give them a lot of credit. And I think if parents of blind children hear us talking about this, they'll be inspired to say, you know, it's better to let the kid go and let them really become what they want to become on their own and with your guidance. But it's their life to live. And we understand how it's easy to be overprotective, but it is so helpful when we can really let someone have fun and be loose.
And unless you hear stories like this, you don't know that unless there's hindsight acting.
Right, right. So my parents were always very supportive of me doing really what I wanted to do within reason. But when I came home talking about how much I loved chemistry, they had a thought of, well, that would be exciting to study, but does this make sense? Are you going to be able to make chemistry accessible to you, even at the lower division college level? And I thought, well, heck, I don't know. I guess I should give it a try, but before that, I should take an honors chemistry class. And that's when I really fell in love with chemistry.
Well, it sounds like your parents were certainly very supportive, and that's really wonderful. How about the reaction of your teachers?
An interesting experience there, because the instructor of the class was wonderful, but very twofold. Saying to the whole class publicly, chemistry is this wonderful subject. It's so much fun. It's so unique, and it really governs why the world is the way it is. Now, Peter and Nancy, you would both argue that physics governs why the world is what it is.
Of course.
We'll share.
I think you're right. I think we have to share in the middle.
But you know, the bottom line is, if you can find a career that you enjoy and you really have that passion about, you're likely to do a lot better at it, and it'll lead to a very good life for you.
Right. And that's very true. That was the very interesting part of this teacher, was that she was twofold. In one respect, really motivating the class, but in another respect, taking me aside privately and saying, you know, I don't know how you're going to study chemistry as a blind person. All you do when you think about chemistry is think about color changes and what's happening inside this reaction flask, and you know, how are things really happening? And I thought about it and scratched my head and thought about it for a few weeks, turned into a few months. And at the beginning of the second semester, when she was still talking to me about, you're doing really well, but I don't know how you're going to make a career out of this, or even if you want to study it in college, I said, you know, I appreciate what you're saying, but nobody can see an atom. None of us have the ability to look inside a reaction flask and see at the microscopic level, at the atomic level, and sometimes subatomic level, what's happening. So we really need to think about it in terms of a cerebral science. And she became my ally at that point and totally supported me.
Now, Hobie, my recollection of being a graduate student is that I was pretty busy. But somehow, you've managed to find the time to not only work with the Francis Ford Coppola Winery developing the wine tastings in the dark, but you've also launched a nonprofit organization. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So I was introduced to blind people doing science and the possibility that I could do science in 2004 by the National Federation of the Blind. And I just feel like anyone can study the sciences, study chemistry, for instance. And with that in mind, with a program that I attended through the National Federation of the Blind with a bunch of great mentors and instructors who were blind, you know, there's not many great programs like that for Californians. So in 2011, long before the inception of the nonprofit, I contacted friends of mine in the National Federation of the Blind of California, sort of our little state affiliate, and said, you know, it'd be fun to put together a chemistry camp for blind high school students where we could teach them that, you know, they shouldn't let their eyesight, their lack of eyesight, hold them back from doing whatever they want, no matter how seemingly visual it is. So we did this camp, and it was a great success. I had a lot of support from folks here at Davis in the chemistry department, and it became very successful. We wanted to do another one in 2012. We got a small amount of generous funding from the National Federation of the Blind of California in 2011. When 2012 came around, I said, well, how am I going to fund this thing? And ended up starting a nonprofit in early 2012 and acquiring funding from several sources to put on the next camp, and started saying, well, how are we going to get funding for future programs? We might want to do more than just chemistry camps. So we started applying for grants and have managed to secure some funding, not a lot, but enough funding to keep the camp going every year. And that's pretty much what the nonprofit is designed to do, is run the chemistry camp. So I'm the founder and director of the nonprofit. My brother actually co-founded the nonprofit with me. He has a background in finance, so that was very helpful. And my research advisor as well is on the board of directors, because he was very influential in the development and implementation of all these camps.
How long is each session of the camp?
A lot of people have plans during the summer, and people don't want to miss school, especially when they're nerds like me. So basically, we cram it into a weekend. So the latter part of Friday, all day Saturday, and all day Sunday. So we keep the kids very, very busy, but it's a matter of one weekend.
Can you describe a typical camp weekend?
Students arrive on Friday in the afternoon, usually around 2 or 3 p.m. not knowing what to expect. We don't like to tell them a lot and spill the beans, if you will, on what the camp is going to entail, what they're going to do. We tell them they're going to be doing some exciting science. We tell them what clothes to bring and basically that they're going to have fun. And there might be parts of the program that are a little scary, not as easy as other things may have been. I have several instructors that I work with, blind and sighted, mostly people from UC Davis and myself, of course, who teach chemistry to the students. And I feel very passionate about the fact that I bring in blind mentors. Say we have 12 students, I like to bring in four or so blind mentors, blind and visually impaired mentors, so one mentor per every three students or thereabouts, who act as role models and basically guides for the students throughout the weekend, walk with them, eat with them, sleep in the same dorms as them, do the chemistry with them, everything, walk down to the campfire, participate in the campfire, light fires, blow things up, you name it. Basically, the mentors are there to show the students, as blind people themselves, that it's okay to not know how to do something the first time. It's okay to get lost for 15 to 20 minutes, sometimes a half an hour, figuring out where we are. But we will figure it out eventually. And that skill is not something that comes easily for a lot of our students who either have recently gone blind or are losing vision, or even students who were born blind and just haven't gotten out that much. You need to learn that it's okay to get lost. And it's okay to struggle. And that's what having blind mentors does, because there's no sighted person to bail you out. So I really like that model.
Where is this camp located?
It's a big 320-acre, absolutely gorgeous mountaintop site in the Redwoods, just north of Napa, California, Enchanted Hills Camp, run by the Lighthouse for the Blind of San Francisco.
Can you run through what the campers might do each day?
Absolutely. Friday, we basically take them out and do a couple of big icebreakers, let them get to know each other, and bring them back to the dining hall, which is sort of the main hub of camp, do a bunch of fire drills, talk about some important safety information. We just let people introduce themselves as a group and talk about maybe one or two things that they enjoy, sort of kind of tell us a little bit about what they know about chemistry so we can get an idea of that. And it's a great sort of opportunity for people to get to know each other. Before the mealtime, before dinner, I like to have students go back to their cabins. And one thing that's very important to me as well is that students make their beds. You know, there's always an option of having beds made for students and towels put out on the beds. You got to do these things yourself. It makes it so much more fun and so much more appreciated once you're done, if you will. That's what I really enjoy about it.
So Friday is basically laying the foundation for the program, getting everybody on the same page and comfortable with what's going to be the rest of the weekend.
Correct. Yeah, and showing them that, you know, they're going to have to do things for themselves. Things aren't going to be handed to them.
Mm-hmm.
And having done that, what do they do Saturday?
Basically, we get them up Saturday morning and after breakfast do several chemistry experiments. For 3 hours, we start out by doing some very cool, accessible organic chemistry where students, using completely tactile, accessible measuring equipment, measure out basically acids and alcohols into flasks and make esters. And they can tell when these reactions are done by a change of smell. And I don't want to give too much away about the program, but give students a great way to actually do hands-on organic chemistry, which is thought of as a very visual subject. And then after lunch, students get to do titrations of acids and bases. And you might remember from your high school chemistry classes, titrations are all about looking at color changes. Oh, we had an indicator and we add a little bit of acid to this base and we saw it go from pink to clear in that case. And a lot of our students come in having taken either physical science or chemistry and having done a few titrations and they say, oh, we can't do those. They're color indicators only. And we actually give them the opportunity to do titrations using olfactory indicators, so things that change smell. Onion or garlic, both of them, if you put them in a basic solution, actually lose their aroma. And as you reacidify the solution, they regain their aroma. So that was for the first probably 3 years that we were using onion and garlic. And during this past chemistry camp, I actually was able to acquire several talking pH meters, which are absolutely incredible for students to use and actually acquire pHs independently and get the exact number, and they can actually draw out a titration curve that way.
I'll keep that trick in mind next time I'm cooking and I get my hands all smelly with garlic and onions.
Oh, stick them in a very saturated baking soda water solution, It'll come right off.
Will do. Thank you.
No problem. Just a little chemistry party trick there. And then really, so Saturday is a bunch of hands-on chemistry.
What kind of background do most of the participants have when they arrive?
So that it's really striking how little students are accustomed to when they come into our program. A lot of students, as a matter of fact, don't even really know what it means to be in a kitchen, or they haven't really been allowed to stand next to their stove. That's startling when you look at someone who's 14, 15, 16 years old, and you think, wow, you know, how sheltered were you when you were growing up? We really like to break down those barriers and show students that, hey, you know, it's okay to do things that are maybe a little bit more risky and, you know, that you may not have done at home. And we try not to say, what, you haven't done these things at home, and be all surprised, because we don't want to insult anyone or their families or anything like that. But I have a big cooking unit, a couple of great blind guys that I know, blind and sighted guys that put on a cooking unit. And then we also do a recreation thing, usually a run around a track or a swim or sometimes a philosophy talk. You know, we kind of have breakout sessions in the late afternoon on Saturday.
Boy, this is sounding like so much fun. What do you do next?
Saturday night is a very special time because it's a time of reflection about Saturday around a campfire. And I try to bring in one keynote speaker to address the group. And it kind of inspire the students to think, wow, you know, what is possible? What can I do? Can I learn from this? Really great experiences for the students to hear these keynote speakers.
And Sunday?
I make everyone go on a walk down to a beautiful chapel in this wooded area. You know, a bunch of blind people hiking through the woods. They haven't done this commonly. When we get to this great chapel that's right by a babbling brook in the midst of a bunch of redwood and madrone trees, we sit down and we just talk. It's nothing religious, but we just talk about the weekend. What have people learned? What have they done? And I bring award certificates and actually distribute them during that time, basically saying congratulations on completing this program. And I think that's a very special opportunity just to be alone with the kids and the mentors in a place where, you know, a lot of them haven't imagined going. And we try to be down there for sunrise, so about 6:45 a.m. And it takes about 45 minutes to get there. So students think, why are you making me get up so early, really, until we get down there? And then most people realize the magic of it. Some grumble the whole way. But we do that, and then we spend Sunday doing more chemistry. And ultimately, I like to bring in professionals, blind and sighted professionals, who use science and chemistry in particular in their everyday careers to address our group and really talk about what they know and how they have used their science professionally so that these students can get some foundation. And then we tie them into the esters that we make and the titrations that we do on Saturday so that the students can see, wow, the work that I have done and what I have accomplished really does have practical value, and I can turn this into a career eventually. So that's a great deal of fun for me and fun for the students.
If they can get excited about it and keep wanting to do it, then as their capabilities increase, their learning and remembering of the details will increase. And, you know, we need more scientists in this country.
And Nancy, isn't that half the battle when trying to get students to pursue undergraduate or graduate degrees in science, is to show them that it's fun? You know, chemistry lab, physics lab can be fun.
Sure can.
Yeah.
Now for this week's final item, all the nitty-gritty stuff you'll need in order to obtain additional information, in order to apply for the program, how much it costs, when it is, when to apply, all that. So you make this experience sound really exciting, and if I were a high school student, I would want to go. If somebody wants to attend, where would they find information?
All of our stuff is up, actually, on accessiblescience.org. www.accessiblescience.org. That's our webpage. Has a lot of information about our nonprofit, and it also has the application that was just uploaded last week. I wanted to make sure it was up there in time, and our program announcement that really describes the whole camp. And, you know, students can come from anywhere in the country or world for that matter.
Is there an email where people can contact you or get in touch with this organization?
Yeah, the best email is my personal email address, Hobie, H-O-B-Y, Wedler, W-E-D-L-E-R, @gmail.com.
And how much does it cost for a student to attend the program?
The program is fully subsidized once a student arrives to one of our three major airports. We have a very trained, wonderful, safe group of people who drive and who meet students at airports. Actually, I work with my mother to put this program on, who is a recently retired teacher of the visually impaired for 27 years. So she's very experienced and loves all of this stuff. She was a big inspiration for me in putting it together, and she is instrumental in our success now.
Are there any travel subsidies available for people coming from further away?
I currently don't have funding to bring people from beyond, say, the San Francisco airport. People can come from Northern California pretty much and get funded, you know, fully, and we can transport from areas, several pickup points that are depicted clearly online in the Bay Area and in the Sacramento area. But if there are programs, and this could go out to people of Lions clubs or Rotary clubs or even chapters of local blindness organizations, maybe the NFB or the ACB or what have you, if chapters could fund this program for students, it would be absolutely incredible. You know, if organizations, clubs, chapters, whoever could fund a student's travel to get to any of our major airports, the student can come to the camp. And that's another great experience, is flying to the program.
When are these camps generally run?
Usually the first week of May. Students typically have to miss a half day of school on Friday and then come for Saturday and Sunday, and really throughout the weekend shouldn't miss much school. There is some downtime for them to get homework done or do whatever they can do, whatever they need to do. We can help them with that. So this particular camp is happening from May 1st through May 3rd.
When should people start applying?
You know, it's a little bit lenient, but definitely by April 15th is good.
Okay.
So as long as we have the attention of people who are interested in science education for blind youth, we'd like to announce the National Federation of the Blind 2015 Scholarship Program for blind undergraduate and graduate students in the United States and Puerto Rico. And the application deadline for that is March 31st of 2015, but that's a great opportunity. And you can learn more about that at www.nfb.org/scholarships.
And of course, if you missed any of that, we'll have links to contact Kobe and links about this NFB program and the chemistry camp in our show notes associated with this show at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1510. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about reading Math ML with JAWS. The ability to read mathematical expressions in documents and on the web is crucial for those learning math and for professionals in the sciences. We'll talk with Rob Gallo, a software developer at Freedom Scientific, responsible for implementing support for Math ML in the JAWS screen reader. And he will also give a demonstration of JAWS reading MathML content. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.